Welcome to The Week Ahead in Russia, RFURL's Monday podcast about significant developments and upcoming events in Moscow and beyond. I'm Steve Gutterman, and my guest this week is Robert Colson, senior correspondent here at RFURL. Thanks for joining me today, Rob.
Thanks. It's nice to be back.
All right. I'd like to start with one thing that's happening this week and that you wrote about last week, Rob. I'm talking about Olga Misyk, a Russian woman who is 19 years old and has been an inspiration to others twice, or at least twice, in the past 2 years. First, at a protest in early August 2019, she read aloud from the Russian Constitution in front of a line of riot police in Moscow. And now Misyk is on trial on a vandalism charge related to a separate protest action. I believe it was last August. And she attracted attention and praise with a defiant address in court late last month. Now, a verdict is expected tomorrow in the trial of Misyk and two co-defendants. She could potentially be sentenced to prison, but prosecutors have reportedly recommended a more lenient form of punishment called restricted freedom. Rob, tell us about Olga Misyk and her words in court and maybe how her case fits into the situation that's unfolding in Russia today.
It is a really interesting case. She's a journalism student at Moscow State University, and she has been protesting, and she still is a student, though that's probably going to change any moment now. She's been protesting for about 3 years now, very actively, and she's very strongly involved in support for political prisoners, or people that she considers to be political prisoners, generally protesters who are in jail. She's involved in keeping up the publicity on the so-called network case, or SET case, which everybody says the FSB was fabricated. She, in addition to the reading the Constitution and the vandalism case, she also was arrested once for just holding up a blank piece of paper on Red Square, which was a sort of powerful symbol, I think. Mm-hmm. I hate to sort of speak for her, and encourage everybody to go read her speech, either in Russian or in English. I haven't seen a complete translation into English, but our article has a lot of quotations, and it's definitely worth reading because she's very impassioned and she's very determined, but at the same time aware of the long odds that she's facing and how she's, really beating her head against the wall, but doing it consciously. A lot of the social media reaction was, people looking at their own lives and their own role in the situation, their own level of fear before this day, their level of courage in speaking out against it. She also powerfully, addressed the court. What are you going to tell your children about what you did during this time that you were handing down guilty verdicts? And last but not least, I had mentioned that she compared herself, I think, aptly to the famous case of the Munich University students in 1943 against Hitler, who were handing out leaflets against Hitler and who were guillotined for it. She, like them, she said she wants to, project optimism and to keep fighting all the way to the end, never compromise her principles, and never appear in her own eyes as to be helpless. It's a great case, and I strongly urge everybody to read her speech.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess, these kind of speeches, or they call them in Russian final words in court of defendants, they've become sort of a tradition that goes back to the Soviet era, I think, to dissidents, but also, to some of the people who have been tried in recent years in Russia, including Alexei Navalny. And he, I just noticed that both of the protests or the actions that Misyk is known for, including the one that led to her vandalism charge trial, occurred before Navalny was poisoned last August, I believe, a few weeks before in that case, and also before he returned to Russia this January following treatment in Germany for the poisoning, and was quickly arrested and then sentenced in early February to serve 2.5 years in prison. So, excuse me, I mean, it's kind of a, it's just a reminder in some ways that these, what I guess a lot of people are saying is kind of an unprecedented crackdown. You know, it was happening before, and there were things going on before Navalny's return, but things I think have snowballed since then, or since his poisoning. And Navalny ended a 3-week hunger strike late last month after doctors said he would die if he continued even for a short time. But there are certainly still concerns about his health and his treatment in prison. On April 29th, in a case that's separate from the one that landed him in prison, Navalny had his own defiant final word in court. And last week, Amnesty International reinstated its designation of Navalny as a prisoner of conscience. That was retracted earlier in a very controversial decision. Rob, just could you bring us up to date a little on what's happening with Navalny?
Yeah, sure. I'd mention also the final words in court. It's an interesting thing. I wouldn't be at all surprised if the authorities try to go after that and limit the ability of the defendant to make a final word, maybe just, you know, to put in some sort of law or rule that they're not allowed to speak if they've made political statements in previous final speeches or something like that, or even if they've ever been convicted before, something like that. So I wouldn't be at all surprised if that happens. The speeches are then there have been, you know, 7 or 8 of them in the recent Putin era that are very powerful and inspiring. But Navalny, when Putin declared that the entire first 10 days of May would be a holiday in Russia, Volkov and other Navalny supporters suggested that one of the reasons why he was doing that was to get Navalny out of the news, and it did seem to work. During holidays, even lawyers are not allowed to visit their clients in prison. There doesn't seem to have been hardly anything from Navalny directly during this period. I looked briefly through his social media this morning and didn't see anything since Easter.
Yes, Orthodox, that's right.
Easter, that is. No messages at all. So it's hard to say how he's being treated or how many more reprimands he's gotten in the last week or so, 10 days. But I imagine now that that's lifted, we'll be hearing he's probably stored up a bunch of stuff. I would expect we'd hear quite a few messages from him. At the same time, the assault on his organization has continued, as everybody's aware, declaring them extremist organizations, breaking up the regional networks, going after the funders of the organizations, banning people who have been involved in those organizations from participating in political campaigns in the future, going after one of Navalny's lawyers, Ivan Pavlov. So the crackdown is continuing very, very severely, and it's sort of going on in the background of sort of Navalny's isolation and silence and over the last 10 days.
Right, absolutely. And we'll see that's interesting to mention the holidays. I think to me, I would just add that does seem to be a sign, you know, that the Kremlin certainly is concerned about, you know, the impression that he could make and that he does make and is very careful about trying to silence him. And now we go into the season of the election campaign be starting soon for the parliamentary State Duma elections, which probably will be held in towards the end of September. They have to be held by September 19th. Navalny's in prison. His supporters, had planned to gather more protests. As the spring goes along and summer starts, and we'll see, you know, how that works out and what develops until then.
Yeah, I also mentioned Alexei Venediktov, the editor-in-chief of Echo Moskvy, had an interesting tweet, a sort of Easter-themed tweet, in which he so almost mystically talks about Navalny as having risen from the dead and has basically said that Navalny has defeated Putin on a personal level, and every time Navalny appears in a personal context, he just, the contrast just gets worse and worse for Putin. And that's why he's being completely sidelined politically, because if he was allowed, even through proxies, to make a political challenge to Putin, the result might be the same. That's what Benedicta said.
Right. And yeah, I mean, I think it seemed like the Kremlin was trying to its hardest to get him not to return to Russia. And when he did, presumably that may have been when, you know, when Putin and his government decided to, you know, to silence him as much as possible for that reason. All right. We're running out of time. We'll wrap it up there. Rob, thanks a lot for joining me.
Thanks for having me. Good to talk to you again.
Okay, I'll be back next Monday for another look at the week ahead in Russia. Meanwhile, please keep an eye out for my Week in Russia newsletter on Friday. Thanks for listening.